All right, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Hurl, NCAR's director, to try to take you in a little deeper now on some of these topics that we've had here. So I think some of your questions will get resolved as you get more information. Thanks, Jim.
Oh, thank you very much, Tom. And as I said in my introductory comments, it's certainly a pleasure and a great opportunity to be here today. And Tom indeed did introduce some of the NCAR programs and I think very importantly some of the NCAR opportunities at a relatively high level. I am going to dive into some of that in a bit more detail, but certainly not all of the detail we could. So I very much would enjoy conversations throughout the rest of the day if you want to hear more details about some of what I'm going to say. I wanted to actually start off, maybe looking a little bit at Joubert there, just to say that, you know, I think all of us here just had an exceptional week, and congratulations on a very successful Open Science Conference here in Montreal. We had a great time. And certainly one of the opportunities we took advantage of was to have the NCAR booth presence. And I know you can't really read that too well up there. It just states the NCAR mission statement, which I'll go into in a bit more detail. But, you know, one of the nice things at a conference like this and having a booth is the opportunity to interact with many members of the community. And we certainly had a lot of traffic through the NCAR booth, so we had a chance to talk about what we do. We had many good conversations with some of our Canadian colleagues. But one of the things I always think about a little bit is it really the NCAR science, the NCAR booth, the mission, the opportunities, or is it what we're famous for, and that is the NCAR Candy Bowl? Certainly, we had a lot of people that grabbed their coffee and immediately went from the coffee station to the NCAR booth to grab the candy. But then, bigger chocolate bars would be handy. But then, you know, an interesting thing happened to this candy jar, you know, which has Reese's and Hershey's and Jolly Ranchers. On about the second day of the conference, Joubert, I'm looking at you again. I don't know if you can see this, but Met Office candy appeared in the NCAR candy there. So, you know, and this was at a time in which Bill Large, who's in the audience, and I were in charge of the booth. So we were able to track down the perpetrators here, Julius Lingo and Andy Brown from the Met Office, and we caught them in the act. But anyway, this is just a poor joke, even worse than your joke, Tom, I think, to start with. But it was a fantastic conference, and I really do want to congratulate you and all the others who were engaged in this. Okay, on to the topic of NCAR, and it was very pleasing to hear in the introductions the number of strong connections and collaborations we already have in place. So I just kind of want to give you a high-level overview of the overall NCAR program. As Tom said, we are a FFRDC, Federally Funded Research and Development Center of the National Science Foundation, who is our sponsor. We do receive funding from other entities, in particular some of the other government entities such as NOAA and NASA, Department of Energy, Department of Defense. Tom also alluded to the fact that we were formed in 1960. On the NCAR side, we have a staff of about 850 extremely dedicated scientists, engineers, technicians, administrative staff who are really working hard in a very collaborative way to advance the very important work that we all do in the atmospheric and the related sciences. One of the great pleasures of being at NCAR, and while I've had this great honor and tremendous opportunity to serve as the director of NCAR, and I've been doing that for about the last year, I've actually been at NCAR for most of my professional career. I came to NCAR a little more than 20 years ago. And one of the great things about being at NCAR is indeed why we're here today, to talk about our collaborative approaches and the many great opportunities that we have to work with the broader community to advance our mission in the atmospheric and related sciences. And in so doing, Tom alluded to the many workshops, the many conferences, the many colloquia, the visitor programs, and I'll say a few more words about that in my few minutes today. But NCAR really is a crossroads for the community to come together, to exchange ideas, to develop partnerships and collaborations and new ideas for research. On any given day, you just don't know who you're going to run into there. And that makes it a really fantastic place to be and to come spend time. we not only have a mission of advancing the science, but a fundamental part of our mission is to also work with the broader community and indeed extend and enhance the capabilities of the university community by providing some major facilities, major computational facilities that Al Kelly is in charge of, major observing facilities that Tom alluded to through our Earth Observing Lab, and our community modeling systems. Indeed, it's already been mentioned several times today, some of our community modeling systems and the engagement of the community in the development and the application of those modeling systems. I'm not going to read vision statements and mission statements for you, just briefly put this up here. I want to point out in terms of the mission statement, though, that, again, it's our responsibility, a fundamental responsibility, to not only work on these important problems and do so collaboratively, but to support, enhance, and extend the capabilities of the broader community, in particular the university community. And I want you to see that is what is written in that mission statement is to work not only nationally, but internationally as well. And that's one of the reasons this is such a nice venue, and I'd like to, again, thank the organizers for putting this together. I'm also not going to go into detail on our overarching strategic plan, but just point out, Rachel had mentioned in the packets, there's some information. We've been working very hard in my first year on putting together a new strategic vision, a new strategic plan for the National Center that, again, is really rooted in this concept of very strong community input and collaboration. In fact, the community had a very large voice in putting together this plan, identifying the scientific frontiers that collectively we should be going after and the role of NCAR in the pursuit of those challenges. So I would just encourage you, when you get a second, to take a look at the plan. Throughout my presentation, you'll see some web links at the bottom. This plan, if you don't want to take a paper copy home, is very easily accessible from the main NCAR webpage. If you go to the main NCAR webpage in the upper right, you can download the most recent version of the plan. It's dated July 2014. On the slide it says June 2014. That's because we made some what I hope to be final revisions. This plan is now in the hands of the National Science Foundation, and we are awaiting their approval, which I hope to receive very, very soon. So I hope that you get a chance to take a look at that plan, and I think it's even maybe a bit of a topic of discussion this afternoon. So we say this word collaboration a lot. This is just one metric of many metrics that we could show. And as I said, it's a wonderful place to come. It's a wonderful place to come spend time at, not only for you, but for the students. Every year we have many hundreds of scientific and technical visits. This is just one snapshot. This is for fiscal year 2013. You can see that we had more than 863 such visitors in fiscal year 2013. And what I really want to point out in this slide is just about 20% of those visits were on the time scale of a week or less. The other 80% were for longer periods of time. And in fact, about 40% of the visits to NCAR by people like yourselves, by researchers in the field, are for periods of 2, 3, or even more months, maybe out to a year or even longer. So we have a very significant number of relatively lengthy long-term visits. Paul Kushner himself, I know, spent a considerable amount of time at NCAR recently. And that's not only, you know, that's of great benefit to all of us, certainly at the National Center. Much of what we do is fueled by these visits from the broader community. Going into a little more detail on some of the opportunities that Tom introduced to you, indeed, one of our really wonderful programs is the Advanced Study Program. And I can attest to the competitive nature of that. Tom alluded to the fact that in terms of our postdoctoral program, it's very competitive. I know that because I was not selected for an ASP postdoc, even though I applied. But there are other postdoctoral opportunities at NCAR, and indeed that's how I got my foot in the door. But first of all, the Graduate Visitor Program. This is a program where we support the visits of graduate students who are pursuing their thesis research. Typically, they come and spend anywhere between about 3 and 12 months at the National Center. One requirement is that a NCAR staff member actually sponsor this visit. So it's very important to keep those connections with NCAR alive so that our researchers are familiar with you and your students' research programs, and we're very happy to sponsor such visits. We also provide support for the thesis advisor to come spend some time as well. It's a pretty significant program. We can support up to about 15 to 20 appointments per year. And for all of these points, for the current year, I put the application deadlines down in case you were interested in this for your graduate students. The summer colloquium has already been mentioned. It's always an incredibly important and exciting opportunity to bring some really bright young minds together for graduate students and recent postdoctoral students in general to come spend 2 to 3 weeks at NCAR. We have the great privilege of hosting this summer colloquium. The topics, the organizers of these meetings, indeed, as was mentioned this year, a very exciting workshop on the topic of uncertainty and how we deal with uncertainty, in particular in terms of climate predictions and climate projections. But they're really just very stimulating events. And so the deadline to propose a topic for the colloquium is coming up here in just about a month, and then the registration that students can apply for will open up very early in 2015. We also have opportunities for the faculty themselves through our faculty fellowship program. Again, this is on the order of about 3 to 12 month visits that faculty spend by participating in our faculty fellowship program. There's also some money set aside to bring some of your students with you as you come to visit NCAR. The application deadline for faculty fellowships this year is October 31st. And then the postdoc program, as Tom alluded to, we make on the order of about 8 or 9 or 10 appointments per year, depending on exactly the nuances of the funding. We also get co-sponsorship for some of these postdoctoral fellowships from our various laboratory programs and the like. They're typically 2-year appointments. As Tom also mentioned, the postdoctoral fellows have complete academic freedom, and the application deadline for that is January the 5th, 2015. Again, all of these programs are detailed on the ASP, the Advanced Study Program webpage, the web link for which is provided at the bottom of this screen. And this is just to show you, in the last year, we made 9 appointments. The 9th appointment that is not pictured here, I think, is indeed in Al's laboratory in the Computational and Information Systems Lab. The important point is not, the important point is these students, but it's not their names or what they're working on, other than just to illustrate that there's a broad array of talent here and a broad array of topics that these postdoctoral researchers work at. So given, 9-10 appointments per year, we typically have on the order of about 20 postdoctoral fellows through the Advanced Study Program. Again, there are other opportunities as well through the research grants of some of our scientists. Now, a little bit later this morning, Bill Large, the director of the Climate and Global Dynamics Division, is going to speak in much more detail than I'm going to hear about, I think, some of the real centerpieces for our broader, not only collaboration, but partnership with the broader community, and that is through our community modeling systems, such as the Weather Research and Forecasting Model and our Community Earth System Model. So I'm going to leave a lot of those details to Bill. But just very quickly, by way of introducing them, just one quick slide here on the Weather Research and Forecasting Model. If you're not familiar with it, it is both a research and an operational tool. It is used operationally around the globe. But in terms of a research tool, it's used for many different aspects of studying aspects of meso and microscale and synoptic meteorology, numerical weather prediction, and the like. It's very widely utilized around the globe. The purple countries, which you can't make out in detail, but the purple countries are the only countries where there have not been downloads of the model code. So it's widely used around the globe. No downloads in North Korea, it appears. But 154 countries around the world. And really what I wanted to try to emphasize in my few moments, because Bill's going to go into more detail on the modeling systems themselves, But that is that we don't only provide all of this open source code, but we also provide the support, the user support. And a very important component of that is the tutorials, so that the students and the early career scientists have the opportunity to come participate in these tutorials and really learn the inner workings of these modeling systems and how to use them to advance their developing research agendas. So, for example, in the case of the WRF modeling system, there's a tutorial that is put on every year as part of the annual WRF users workshop. That is typically in mid to late June, the WRF users workshop being hosted in Boulder at NCAR. But our WRF team, and the tutorial team in particular, also puts on the order of 4 to 6 additional tutorials throughout the year, not only at NCAR, just maybe one or two others in addition to the annual users workshop occurs at NCAR. They also go out to universities and other federal laboratories. So there's opportunities to bring these modeling teams to your home institutions to conduct these tutorials. And again, I can put you in contact, or you can visit the main web pages of these modeling systems to learn more. The other major one, of course, is the community Earth system model. There's a number of pictures here on this. The main web page for the community Earth system model is indicated at the top. Just as a reminder for maybe those of you that don't work so much with this modeling system, for many years this was referred to as the Community Climate System Model, or CCSM. Broadly speaking, that is when the modeling system represented the so-called physical climate system with atmospheric, oceanic, land, and sea ice components coupled together and utilized for many studies of climate variability and climate change. Recently, we have added to the complexity, expanded the capabilities of this modeling system by adding different atmospheric components, in particular a whole atmospheric component that simulates the behavior of the atmosphere to the reaches of outer space, much more complete representations of atmospheric chemistry so that we can study things like the carbon and the nitrogen cycle and the interactions with the climate system, representations of ecosystems in both the land and the oceanic components. And we're working on fully coupling in then land ice models as well, so we can study the response of things like the Greenland and the Antarctic ice sheets to climate variability and climate change, and the feedbacks of those systems in the broader climate system. Again, this is truly a community modeling system. It's developed in full collaboration with other research agencies. In particular, the Department of Energy is a major sponsor for this modeling system. The universities, the entire modeling system is really dictated by a very strong community governance system that Bill will speak to in more detail. Fully documented, freely distributed, and again, we put on tutorials for this modeling system as well. There's a relatively brief tutorial that is given as part of an annual CESM workshop that occurs the third week of June every year in Breckenridge. We typically have on the order of about 400 scientists from the community. And one of the things that I really like about that workshop is, I think in recent years, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, but we have upwards of about 20 to 25% of the attendance being first-time attendees at this meeting. And I think that's just really nice. It's a really attractive draw of new intellectual talent into what we're doing in terms of CESM. But we have a much more dedicated and intensive sort of hands-on tutorial that we conduct usually after the Breckenridge meeting. The tutorial this year was just, I think, last week, if I remember correctly. I should remember because I gave a lecture at that. But a one-week tutorial where we can formally host and support about 80 students in participating in that tutorial. And then we have a number of others that we don't have the funds to fully support, but they're welcome to sit in. And I think this last week we had in total more than about 100 students in total attending this tutorial. So again, encourage you to take a look at the website and learn more about this. I just very wanted to very briefly emphasize the fact it's not only the model code and the tutorials, but we make all of the experiments freely available, easy to access, and we partner indeed with the Computational and Information Systems Lab to make a lot of this data available. You can go onto the CESM web pages. You can get a complete listing of all of the experiments that are available for your own analysis and your own research programs. You can learn about the details, the resolutions, the forcing data sets, even the computers that these experiments are run on. And we provide a pretty comprehensive set of diagnostics for each one of the model components. This is a relatively new diagnostics package that has been developed that is really focusing on several metrics of climate variability. You can look at major atmospheric or oceanic or coupled modes of ocean atmosphere variability. What's indicated on this particular snapshot of the package is the ability to look at things like global trend maps, global time series, and the like. And it's very powerful. You can produce a lot of, I think, very useful graphics. This is just one illustration. There's, I think, about 44 plots of the globe up here. But just to show you, without too much effort, this is just looking at all of the different models that have contributed to the most recent assessment report of IPCC. And looking at the trends of northern wintertime sea level pressure over the period from 1950 through 2005. It's just an illustration of the power of some of these diagnostic packages, which are freely available for you to utilize. Mohan and also Bill is going to touch on aspects of some of our efforts in terms of community data and community data sets. And I think in particular, Bill's going to talk a little bit about some of our activities of adding value to data sets through expert user guidance and the like. What I wanted to focus on in this part of the talk, and again, Mohan's going to talk much more generally about the broad array of data available through the organization, but I'm going to talk about one of the key data sets that's really under the stewardship of our Computational and Information Systems Lab, and I'm very glad that Al was able to adjust his schedule and be here today. And certainly he can speak to this in more detail. But one of the real gold standards in CISL is the Research Data Archive. There's a bunch of statistics up here. The key point is that this is a very, very rich and pristine array of a variety of meteorological and oceanographic data. We also have analyses and reanalysis products. And the like. The total data volume is currently more than about 1.5 petabytes, and there are several ways in which you can get access to this data. We have the Earth System Grid, Community Data Portal, and other opportunities as well. The key point being, again, these very rich data sets are freely available and open to the broad community to access, and you can learn more about that data set here. I'd like to thank the people in Al's lab, and maybe Mohan, maybe you had some aspect in this analysis as well. This is the one slide that's really tailored into Canada, looking at the Canadian use of this RDA data set over roughly a 10-year period from 2005 up until the last month or so. And you can see that Canada is a very heavy user of these data sets as well.
Sorry, 600 users from the university sector over the last 10 years, is that right?
Yeah, about 586 unique users from the universities.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yep, and a steady download of about 30 terabytes of data annually from the Canadian sources. So I don't know how much of that is you and your group, Paul.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
or did you even know about this?
My group is not that. I was wondering what they were doing all along.
Yeah, now you know.
Yeah, okay.
Now you know.
Now I know.
I'm sorry, what was that? Ah, yes. Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Scale up. That's right.
Scale up. Okay. Another very nice piece of software that I guess the home of which is also within our Computational and Information Systems Lab, but others, in particular in Bill's group in the Climate and Global Dynamics Division, play a role, is a piece of software called the NCAR command language. This is another freely available community-based scripting language that is really developed and designed to facilitate the analysis and the visualization of data, weather data, climate data, model data. It's very robust. It's very well tested. It's portable. It's very well supported. And I think that this can be an extremely valuable asset if you are interested and have this kind of a need. I would strongly encourage you to look at the capabilities of the in-car command language. A couple quick metrics. Currently, we have more than about 20,000 users of NCL across the globe. You can see there's a large number of downloads and a healthy dialogue about this software package on a monthly basis. And again, to emphasize that we put on training workshops and tutorials. These workshops tend to be about 3.5 days in duration. They're free. They've given a very large number of workshops in the U.S. and internationally, 73 workshops since February of 2000, touching more than 1,000 students. And I checked with some of the key players in NCL just a day or two ago, and I don't think they've given a workshop in Canada, but they wanted me to relay to you that they are ready to come up to this beautiful country and give a workshop on NCL. So again, talk with Al, look at this website, and we can facilitate this. And then finally, again, we're going to talk about the community models, but of course I also wanted to emphasize another key activity at NCAR. In the Computational and Information Systems Lab, but really working across the organization, and that is our DART software. DART stands for Data Assimilation Research Testbed. It's a very powerful ability to do data assimilation with a range of models, from very simplified toy models up to very complex modeling systems. CESM, for instance, is utilizing DART for initializing the comprehensive community Earth system model. Public domain software, again, very well tested, portable, free, can assimilate a wide range of observations, real observations or synthetic observations. And once again, we provide a number of tutorials, and these are just some sample logos, including logos from York, by the way. Where scientists there are utilizing this software. In terms of the computational facilities themselves, Tom's alluded to the new NCAR Wyoming Supercomputing Center, which houses our Yellowstone supercomputing system. Currently, it's a 1.5 petaflop machine with about 145 terabytes of data. It's really a computing environment, though. There's also the GLADE system, which is a centralized file system for data storage. And then the Geyser and Caldera machines, which are really there for analysis and visualization. You can have access to those machines. You can have access to the data. For instance, I mentioned about the RDA data archive. That's free. That's eligible. You're eligible to do that. In terms of the Yellowstone machine itself, and Al can speak to the details, but most of the allocations on the Yellowstone machine require an NSF award. I know Al did also want me to mention that the University of Wyoming does have a separate allocation of about 80 million core hours, and our colleagues at the University of Wyoming certainly welcome collaborations with other research institutions as well. And you can talk with Al more about those details. To wrap up, and I understand I am standing between us and a biological break and maybe refilling our coffee cups, so I'll wrap it up. I also wanted to mention some of the capabilities of our Earth-observing laboratory. Our Earth-observing laboratory, or EOL, as it says here, manages, operates, and deploys the National Science Foundation's lower atmospheric observing facilities. And in so doing, provides a lot of support for field campaigns, process studies, and data services in support of NSF-funded observational field campaigns. We have a very significant amount of instrumentation. We have two research aircraft. What is pictured here is the Gulfstream 5 research aircraft, which has really amazing capabilities in terms of the height, in which it can fly to more than about 15,000 meters. It has a range of more than 11,000 kilometers, so it can follow air parcels across the ocean basin to reach the South Pole from bases in New Zealand and South America. We also have a second aircraft, the C-130, which can host a large array of instrumentation and carry a pretty heavy payload, and a range of other in situ and remote sensing systems, sounding systems, radars, and the like as part of this lower atmospheric observing facility. Canadian colleagues can certainly participate and have access to these instrumentation suites and to these research aircraft if they are part of these field campaigns, and we certainly welcome that kind of collaboration, and there's been many examples in the past, but a requirement is that the lead PI must be funded by the National Science Foundation. Tom alluded to the new digital guide, so I'm not going to say very much about that at all here, just to emphasize that this is a really useful document, and you can download it directly from the website. They also have online apps for Android machines and other machines if you'd rather look at all of this on an app on your phone. But again, I just wanted to point out that we also give tutorials and sort of town hall sessions on the whole suite of observational facilities that are provided by EOL, how you go about getting access to them and the like. And so there's a couple of past meetings. Just wanted to point out for any of you attending the fall meeting of the American Geophysical Union in San Francisco, December 15th through the 19th. I'm not sure of the exact day, but we will be hosting another town hall on the lower atmospheric observing facilities and the role of EOL in hosting those for the community. This is a new initiative. Bill mentioned the Atmospheric Chemistry Division that's part of our Earth System Laboratory. They have a major new initiative that I just want to call your attention to. It's called ACCORD. That stands for the Atmospheric Chemistry Center for Observational Research and Data. This is really almost hitting the research a reset button. Our chemistry group has many outstanding collaborations and has participated with many aspects of the broader community in terms of in situ chemical campaigns, but this is really stepping back and trying to build a much more community-oriented process and facilitate the chemistry community coming together to identify where the grand challenges are, where the very important problems in terms of observational atmospheric chemistry lie, and then what we need in terms of providing measurement capabilities, and then how NCAR can best facilitate getting that work done. And so there is a science steering committee. They had their first meeting just a few months ago in April of 2014. And I wanted to call your attention that for those of you in the atmospheric chemistry community or any others, let me know. There's going to be a survey that's sent out to begin to pursue some of these questions. There's going to be another NCAR-sponsored town hall on this topic at AGU. And then there's going to be an open community workshop that I would certainly, if you're interested, in in situ chemical instrumentation and the like. There's going to be a community workshop that NCAR is hosting in early 2015 around these issues. And then finally, several solar physicists in the audience that you know much more about this instrumentation and the capabilities than I'm sure I do, but I'd be remiss in not also pointing out, as Tom alluded to, we do have facilities at Mauna Loa, and several very important instrument suites that are collecting data, and those data sets are also freely available for you to access and download as well in terms of solar instrumentation, and there's upper atmospheric instrumentation as well. So I feel like I've been talking enough. I'm going to stop at this point. And again, I really look forward to talking to you throughout the course of the day to dive into even more detail on these topics. As you wish. So thank you very much.
Well, let's take some
questions. Yeah, absolutely happy to take questions.
Have a break after that.
Hi. Okay, well, nice to have you here, and quite happy also to see the strategic plan that NCAR put together under your leadership. It's quite comprehensive and very well explained. I think this is really progress. And I would like to understand a little bit more, because one of your mission statements is to eventually nurture, promote technological transfer of activity that have been, or system that have been developed at the at NCAR. Of course, there's names like WARF, CSM, and DART are very well known. And I cannot stop making a parallel when I look at where I am now at the Met Office in UK, where NERC, the Met Office Academic Partnership with Oxford, Reading, University, all working together in coordinating their activity with the Joint Weather Climate Research Program, which I go myself each 2-3 months to discuss what we do with investment, postdoc, et cetera, and or also developing system like the Air Quality Unified Model, which is done with University, John Pyle, and NERC, and the Met Office. So my question would be, what is the strategy for NCAR eventually in the U.S. to try to do this with the National Weather Service and try to promote such collaboration, which will be very important in the future, especially with a question about what will be the next HPC platform, and should not we share more closely these tools. So I know it's not an easy question. I've been around in the U.S. for many years now, but I would certainly like to get from you as NCAR leader.
It's a complex topic. It's not an easy topic, but it is an easy answer from my perspective in terms of that we are a willing partner in terms of enhancing that kind of collaboration. A lot of the work that we do really benefits. It's not our work, it's the community's work through these community modeling systems. A lot of the research that I do think should seriously be considered for much more efficient and timely transition to operations. So we're a willing partner in that. And what I mean by that is that in my 1 year on the job, and thanks to Tom and others that have afforded some of these or made available some of these discussions, I've been talking with some of the leadership at NCEP, for instance, Bill LaPenta. We've been talking very much about opportunities to bring NCEP scientists more to NCAR, to work directly with us on some of the research and inform our scientists about what the operational needs are, as well as, you know, two-way exchanges of NCAR staff spending more time at centers such as NCEP as well. So, you know, I would just answer that is that we're here, we're willing to engage in that. NCAR has a research focus, and we are NSF's FFRDC. We have these computers slipping down here. Our mission statement is our mission statement. That is our fundamental responsibilities. But in so doing, I think that there's a lot of latitude to work more than we have in the past with operational centers like NCEP. We also have things like the DTC, the Developmental Testbed Center, where we have an activity right now. Bill Kuo is the director of that, that its mission is to facilitate R2O and O2R, okay? And they are playing an active role in that. But can NCEP do more in terms of reaching out to our community, to centers like NCAR? I think so, and I think that the leadership there is making good progress in that direction, but there's a lot to do. Paul?
And just to continue that point of discussion, I think that what NCAR is doing in undergoing those interactions with the Weather Service and other government departments is bringing the university and academic community to the table. I think that's really important because, after all, the students and the postdocs we're talking about are really being awarded degrees by those universities. They're being trained in the universities. And so this is a really, I think it's important for the U.S. It's also, I think, important for us to think about if, as a theme of this meeting is what the university community might be doing. So I think I'm very glad that Gilbert raised this point that there are different models out there, and I hope we have that theme repeated a couple of times today.
Yep. It's a good topic for discussion.
So maybe it's a good time to take a break. Let's take about 10 minutes and then we'll come back.